We're discussing over-the-counter hearing aids and this new category of federal rules that are forming around these devices that address mild to moderate hearing loss. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to the National Institutes of Health, roughly 15% of American adults report some trouble hearing. That's over 37 million people. Are you in this group? When did your hearing difficulties start? Have you tried to get fit for hearing aids but have been denied by your insurance? 800-642-1234. Melanie Burr-Lawler is a clinical professor and audiologist in the UW-Madison Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders. Serves on the board of the Wisconsin Speech Language Pathology and Audiology Association. Melanie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us what's in the works here with the FDA rules changing on hearing aids.
Yeah, thank you. So the FDA is proposing to establish a new category of over-the-counter hearing aids, meaning that these hearing aids will be sold directly to the consumer. So like if you go to Walgreens or Walmart or online, and the hearing aids, like you said, are only designed to be, they will be only designed to be for mild to moderate hearing loss and for adults, so people ages 18 and older.
What is the timeline here on this taking place?
So this started, the wheels started turning for this back in 2017, but the category and the description of the guidelines was just released last week. And now we're in a comment period where the public or professionals can read the document that was put out by the FDA. And we have until January 18th of 2022, so a 90-day comment period. And after that period, the comments close and the FDA reviews everything. And then eventually they'll release the guidelines, and the companies that are going to be producing these will release them to the market once they can follow the guidelines.
So relatively near future here, and this really applies to a lot of people. The federal health experts say, look, about one in five adults have difficulty following a conversation when there's background noise. So these non-prescription hearing aids could really apply to a lot of people.
Yeah, I think that the goal with this new category of hearing aids is to increase access to the public, because there are so many people that could benefit from hearing aids that who are unable to afford them, or there are some other barriers in the way. And so the idea is that this is a lower cost option that's readily available to people, like reading glasses are before you get your prescription glasses.
Right. I mean, it seems like we're applying the analogy to the dime store reading glasses that I'm wearing right now. Like, I know, yeah, I need bifocals, right? But my optometrist says I'm wearing the right power of readers and I'm not going to get new glasses now. They're too expensive and my readers are doing, you know, a fine job. Are there parallels there?
There are parallels, but then there are some aspects that are different from that analogy. So definitely the idea is to catch people with a mild hearing loss who may not be ready to take that step toward prescription hearing aids. But due to the fact that these are an electronic device, there are some other considerations. So you have to be very careful as a consumer to get a good quality device. You know, we know there's a lot of variability already in consumer electronics and the quality that's available. And then there's the consideration of ensuring that you're getting something that's appropriate for you. So something that's not too loud that could damage your hearing, or something that is just not helpful because it's not a good quality device or not loud enough. And some people may have medical issues that need to be addressed that that may not look into that before getting a over-the-counter hearing aid. And so maybe the device isn't helpful, but not because there's something wrong with the device, because there's something else going on with the hearing system.
Yeah.
So there are some other considerations as well.
Melanie Berlaller with us, clinical professor and audiologist with the UW Department of Communication Sciences and Disorders. As we look at this roadmap for the FDA to allow non-prescription hearing aids, you can join in. Are you experiencing hearing loss? Have you explored getting hearing aids, but were you unsure if you would qualify? 800-642-1234. Melanie, this category of mild to moderate hearing loss, how is it, you know, how do you determine mild to moderate?
Yeah, so I think that's a big question for the public. Really, as an audiologist, we determine that through a series of clinical tests. And so if anyone has a question of whether or not they would qualify for the over-the-counter hearing aids, my best advice would be to seek a good hearing evaluation with an audiologist. I think a lot of us audiologists are excited for the opportunity to help the public pick the right device for them, whether it be a prescription hearing aid or an over-the-counter hearing aid. So the idea behind these is that you will self-identify. But I think if there's any question at all of whether or not you would qualify, I would seek a full evaluation.
Hearing aids can be so expensive, thousands of dollars. Will this rules change make a more competitive marketplace among the manufacturers of hearing aids? Will it make the high cost come down some?
I think that's the goal and that's the hope, because hearing aids are very expensive. I can only predict at this point since they're not yet available to the public, but I think it's going to cause some market disruption. And I imagine that will be a good thing for the public, where we'll see companies coming into this that maybe produce other types of consumer electronics that want to get into the hearing aid market. And so I think just the competition will be helpful, but I would also encourage buyers to check with their hearing professional if they have questions about the quality of the device, because I think there might be some devices that are better than others.
And sometimes you can have like this feud with your hearing aid. You're turning it down, you're turning it up. It's amplifying in the wrong way. These are really sensitive devices.
That is true. My goal as an audiologist when I work with people is to figure out the best way to program the device using the evidence and the science that we have so that that is not a concern. And so we work really closely with our patients to make sure that they aren't having to do a lot of manipulation and that things are comfortable regardless of the environment that they're in. I agree with your comment that it might be more of a concern when you're purchasing something and fitting it on yourself. Mm. So again, that's where I would urge people, if they're having challenges, to check in with an audiologist.
We've heard about online hearing tests. I'm just wondering how you've seen the technology change.
Yeah, so over-the-counter hearing aids aren't yet available. So anything that's happening online, every state has some different regulations right now. And those are, I think those obviously aren't as reliable as something that's done in a soundproof booth, but that is being done under the supervision or under the care of a hearing healthcare professional remotely. Mm. The over-the-counter hearing aids that you'll purchase in a store may or may not be done in conjunction with a test. So that is a difference. You might be able to purchase. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
You might be able to purchase an over-the-counter hearing aid just in a box with self-identifying your hearing loss just without ever being evaluated.
Very much do-it-yourself here, perhaps on the horizon as we discuss the future for over-the-counter hearing aids, non-prescription hearing devices, what it could mean for people who have mild hearing loss. We have UW-Madison audiologist and clinical professor Melanie Berlaller taking your questions. Does hearing loss frustrate you? Does it frustrate your friends or family? Do you get tired of asking people to repeat themselves or to speak up? Do hearing difficulties cause you to feel isolated or alone? Join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Melanie Berlaller here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the future of over-the-counter hearing aids and who could be helped by them, perhaps at a fraction of the cost of traditional hearing aids. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The proposed FDA rule would allow adults to buy hearing aids without an exam or a fitting, with the goal of making them more affordable, more accessible. Are the current costs for hearing aids out of reach for you? When was the last time you got your hearing tested? Would you buy over-the-counter hearing aids? 800-642-1234. We have UW audiologist Melanie Burr-Lawler. And with us, we're about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Lauren now in Burlington, who has had hearing loss since their 20s. Lauren, hi.
Good morning. I saw them a couple of weeks ago at Walgreens, and I was like, wow, you know.
We lost Lauren, completely lost Lauren there. But, you know, Melanie, I'm wondering, in a situation of Lauren, who is now apparently in their 60s, has had hearing loss in their 20s, but has really struggled with it all their life. What do you say to people whose insurance may not cover them?
Well, that's a really good question. And there are, hearing aids are very expensive. And one of the things we do in our clinic is we work with people and try to figure out the best match, both for the hearing levels and for the pocketbook. And we have some programs in place to help people. We run a program at UW-Madison in our teaching clinic for the university that can provide free hearing aids to people who qualify financially. But that's just our local program. But in terms of people who have struggled their whole lives and been wearing hearing aids their whole lives, there are many, many people who have a more significant hearing loss or one that's progressed over the years that will still need prescription hearing aids. And so there are some programs in place. If you're working, you can seek, if we're just talking about financial assistance, if you're in the working world, there are programs through the Department of Workforce Development to help pay for hearing aids. There are some insurance companies do have a benefit. And so we try to help route people into
programs that could help.
The programs that will help them. Yeah. And then there are some people that do pay out of pocket for hearing aids if they don't have insurance coverage. And so we work with people in that regard as well. So there are some people who will still need to pursue prescription hearing aids, and often those will be really life-changing for people. And so when you think about the costs of the hearing aid spread out over the years of use, kind of like if you're doing a cost-benefit analysis, often it makes a lot of sense for people. But I do acknowledge how expensive hearing aids are, and I really hope that this over-the-counter hearing aid option will maybe change things for everyone down the road. That's kind of my lofty idea, is maybe that will bring down the cost of prescription hearing aids as well, but we will see.
Melanie, can these devices be recycled or reused or fitted for a new person if they've been used once before?
I am not sure what is going to be happening with the over-the-counter hearing aids, but I imagine that since they're purchased by the consumer, they can be passed along to another consumer. Prescription hearing aids can be, if an audiologist or another hearing healthcare professional acknowledges, you know, okay, I have the ability to do so, and you can pay for my services and the verification and programming that we do. That is an option, even with prescription hearing aids. And that's something we're seeing a little more of these days, having people come in with devices that they purchase elsewhere, at least at our clinic or online. And we provide the care and the service to get them programmed just right for the patient.
Oh, you fine tune them in a way.
Oh, yes. Yes. We do a lot of that. And that, you know, that personalized care, that can be really helpful for people if they're struggling or they're having trouble with the physical fit, the sound quality. And so that is something I see a lot of in my clinic.
So as we look at access at the federal level, the budget blueprint President Biden released yesterday has hearing benefits in it, and it calls for Medicare to cover hearing benefits. And I'm reading here from the framework, establish a hearing benefit in Medicare, a crucial benefit to our seniors for a reasonable cost. What will this do you think?
Well, I'm not entirely sure. This is something we've been advocating for years and years and years. So it's really exciting to see that it is continuing to be in the bill. There was a thought that it might be removed. I think just what you said, hopefully it will provide a financial benefit to help people pay for prescription hearing aids. So there's a lot of people that won't qualify for these over-the-counter hearing aids due to the fact that they're for mild to moderate hearing loss, or maybe people do need a little more technology available to them. And so this would help in that regard.
We're talking with Melanie Berlaller, who is a clinical professor and audiologist at UW-Madison, as we discuss the future of some hearing aids available without a prescription or exam and what that could mean. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your hearing experiences. We heard from Elna in Madison, called in and couldn't stay with us. And Elna says that they see ads for hearing aids and is wondering, are the hearing aids in these advertisements different than the ones that require a prescription? Elna says it's hard to tell.
Yes. So right now, the over-the-counter hearing aids, the true medical hearing aids, are not available to the public. So if you're seeing ads in like direct marketing, like a flyer that comes to your mailbox, or an ad in a newspaper or a parade magazine, it might be one of two things. It might be an ad for something called a personal sound amplifier. Those are not regulated. There's no cross-check on the amplification, the quality, the output, if it's too loud. You can purchase those in a place like Cabela's, like something called a hunter's ear. Those are not hearing aids. But some people try to use those kind of to fill the gap because they tend to be less expensive. I've seen a lot of variability in quality. Mm. Or the other option is that they might be an ad for a prescription hearing aid that you would go see an audiologist or hearing aid dispenser to purchase. And so that would be something that is already available to the public, but you would go through a hearing healthcare provider. And then there are some of those in some states that you can purchase online under the guidance of a hearing healthcare provider.
We heard from Riley, wrote in an email, is wondering, Melanie, if wearing inexpensive hearing aids can prevent hearing loss.
Unfortunately, no, not hearing loss itself, but wearing hearing aids can help keep people engaged in conversation, socially active. Untreated hearing loss has been found to be associated with a whole host of other health and medical problems. It's been highly correlated with earlier onset of dementia. And so wearing hearing aids can really bring people back into that social engagement and keep their brains active. So it's a very good thing, but it doesn't prevent hearing loss itself.
So you can say, you're saying that it can really have social consequences here, leading to isolation, perhaps depression?
Yes, that has been found in the science, yes.
Is hearing loss progressive? Will it get worse over time?
In some instances, yes. There are people who are born with hearing loss and whose hearing loss stays relatively stable throughout the course of their lives. And just as an aside, I just want to say that the over-the-counter hearing aids are not for children, and parents should not purchase those for a child. There's a lot of other considerations that need to be taken into account. But hearing loss in adulthood can be progressive, and there is a special type of hearing loss that happens with age. And so we see the rate of hearing loss increase with age, and often that type of hearing loss can progress, but at different speeds for different people.
This seems like to be a very pivotal, perhaps maybe exciting time in your profession. What do you hope comes of this?
Oh, that's a really good question. So I'm only speaking personally, personally and as my own professional, but I really hope that this causes some exciting market disruption, that it causes new innovation. We've seen a lot of amazing changes in prescription hearing aid technology over the last several years. I've been doing this 20 years, and the last maybe 5 years have been super exciting with rechargeable and amazing things you can do with your app and streaming sound through your phone, using your hearing aids kind of as Bluetooth earphones. And so I'm excited to see what is going to come based on the fact that maybe other consumer electronics will be involved. And I think, you know, we need to be, I guess the catchy word is nimble and adaptable. And as audiologists kind of work these into our, this is my opinion, work these into our practice and, you know, help vet the technology for people who are interested in a non-prescription option. So
Melanie,
I think it's going to be exciting.
Thank you for joining us. Melanie Berlaller, clinical professor, audiologist at UW-Madison. News is next here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Carl Christensen with a story about having the gift of seeing spirits.
A good ghost story, especially around this time of year. Dorothy Malone of Milwaukee shared a childhood encounter with the supernatural at X-Fabula's Story Slam Identity event held in March of 2020.
I was a little girl, and I was able to see ghosts. I could see them all the time, everywhere. Someone told me that if you throw salt over your shoulders, that would get rid of them. So I got every box of Morton salt I can find and just tossing them. Now I'm going down this dark picture, a dark hallway. I see a white shadowy figure. So now I'm cursing, not again. Not again. You know, and I'm like, oh my God. So I'm trembling at about 10 years old. And I have heard that they cannot hurt you. You only can hurt yourself. Oh, that was, now I'm running in the walls, falling down the stairs, you know, outside at 3 o'clock in the morning. So as time went on, I heard that poltergeists will leave children by the time they're 13 years old. So I can't wait till I'm 13. I just can't wait. I mean, hurry up, you know, because all this time these ghosts are effing with me. So someone said, oh, if you curse them out, then they'll leave. So now I'm having a field day. Leave me to hell. My mother said, whoa, what's going on in there? So that didn't last too long because I got spanked. You know, I got whipped out. You know, I'll be using that mouthwash, ivory soap, and all of that. But I'm thinking this would have the ghost leave me alone. Now, here I am at 13. No ghosts. I'm like, oh my God, they're gone, only to have one hovering above my bed. Now, I get the blanket, throw it over it, and give me the look. Go somewhere. I don't want to see you no more. It was howling too while it was up under there. I was doing all I beat this shit out of. But I learned I have a gift, and part of my identity is that I could, in black terms, read people. I can tell a little bit about your spirit by talking to you. I can tell, you know, you can't play a player, so I know if you're trying me, then I can tell that, you know. And I just have a way with babies. They would just look at me and like, that's a good person, that's the good one right there. And the little kids be like a compliment all the time. I like your glasses, I like your wig. I'm like, thank you. You know, so but going through that experience and always trying to find a meaning in life, or why I'm here, or looking to the cosmos for my existence, I think that had a part in it growing up with these ghostly images all around me. But today, you know, I'm at peace with them. I don't fear them as much. And that's my story.
Dorothy Malone's story comes to us from Xfabula, a storytelling organization based in Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Carl Christensen.
And now to Green Bay, where a math teacher is bringing more of the real world into math concepts. Get Real Math and Science videos feature dozens of real world scenarios, and they're produced at area manufacturing companies. How do you use math in your job? Do you work in manufacturing or engineering? Maybe you're a carpenter or a dressmaker. How much math do you do in your head or longhand versus what computer programs assist you with? Give a shout out to Math on the Job, 800-642-1234. Marie Visti is a middle school teacher in the Green Bay Area Public School District. She's been in education for nearly two decades. Marie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Good morning. I think we need to take a very deep breath and check in. How are you doing? How are you holding up? How is this pandemic year for you and your students?
Well, you know, it's been so great to get back to the classroom with my kids and have them all with me all together. My kids this year have been, they've really been a gift. And I'm not sure if it's because they're so excited to all be back together or what the situation is, but they asked me to promise to give them a shout out. And so I have to do that. They are really excited about being back. It's been really, really busy. We have to be conscious of the transitions that kids are going through as we're all kind of heading back into things. But it's been so great to be back into the classroom with the kids, have them interacting with each other. It's really fabulous.
Yeah, just shout out Miss Visti's on the radio, y'all. Well, you know, this is the hour of the day, though, where we don't often get the privilege of talking with school teachers. You're usually at work, but it's student conferences, so we get you on this kind of off day. While we have you here, can you take a moment to really level with us who aren't in your profession? How can we be better allies to our teachers?
Well, I think a big part of it has to do with making sense of what our goals are for kids and thinking about how we can support that. I know in mathematics, there's a lot of frustration because we want to help our kids, but maybe we don't remember how to do certain things, or we're seeing our kids doing problems that don't look like the way that we did them, or that they're using different strategies. And I always think about how important it is just to be a cheerleader for sense making and to listen, to encourage kids to talk through problems and just keep asking them those questions about, well, what does that mean? Show me what you mean by that, you know, and really having those conversations. It's more than just the calculating and the answer. It's about the conversation.
Yeah, opening up math to discuss how you're approaching something. What are you seeing that maybe I'm not seeing? So making it more of a back and forth.
Yes, absolutely. Because when it comes down to how we use math in our lives, math is about problem solving. Mathematics is not the problem itself. Mathematics is something that helps us to solve our problems and make sense of the world around us. So we want it to be about how we make sense of problems and how we make sense of the world. Whether kids are learning basic addition in elementary school, or like my algebra students, they're learning mathematical modeling, or they're getting into high school and they're learning some of those higher level concepts. I try to emphasize that it's not always exactly about how we're going to use that particular skill, but how we're going to make sense of problems and use mathematics to solve life's problems.
You know, mathematics being so near and dear to your heart, being an educator for a couple decades, what do you love about teaching math? And do you still get surprised?
Oh, absolutely. Every day. It's like having a picture into the way the human brain works. And the more I learn about my students and the more I learn about their reasoning, the more the wonderful surprises happen. I was just working with a student during lunch yesterday, and we were working through some problems, and he came up with something really quickly. And I thought to myself, wow, how did he do that? Because I didn't think of it. And when he talked me through it, just seeing the creativity that goes into restructuring numbers and how that all pulls together, I think is something that surprises me all the time. When I first got into teaching, I got into it because I enjoyed doing math. I enjoyed helping other people do math, and those aha moments that people have when they're able to do something that they found difficult. More and more for me, it's still about that, but it's also about helping people to realize their potential and how incredible their brains are, how Joel Bowler refers to it as plasticity, how flexible our thinking can be and how flexible our learning is.
Oh, I really appreciate that explanation. Thank you. The Get Real Math videos, how do they show students how they can apply these math problems to real life, and how have you incorporated them into your classroom?
Well, when they started in the beginning, it was really about having a conversation. I was working as a curriculum coordinator at the time, and I was having a conversation with the Northeast Wisconsin Manufacturers Alliance. They were really excited about kind of the soft skills related to math, not just the specific calculations. While those are really important, precision is very important, fluency. At the same time, they were excited about the idea of sense making and problem solving, precision, communication. And so the Get Real Math videos were really a two-sided conversation about what teachers need, but what manufacturers are also seeing that they need from students who are graduating. And when we say manufacturing, we're talking about hands-on jobs that are really, in the shop, but we're also talking about planning and engineering and all the things that surround those logistics. For kids who were learning about manufacturing jobs and seeing not just specific careers, but seeing how it works in the world around them and being able to say, oh my gosh, I never even thought of that. There must be so many possibilities. So the Get Real Math videos really came out of that idea. And with those collaborations, kids have the opportunity to view real world problem solving and participate in it. Not just see someone solving a problem, but have a problem posed to them. And really think about, wow, what would you have to know to solve this problem? What information would you need to solve this problem? Instead of kind of being like those textbook problems that we're all used to seeing, do problems 1 through 20 and then that story problem at the end, where that story problem was very contrived. And the answer, you weren't even sure how to make sense of it because, well, there's actually a cartoon about it where like the answer to the problem is Sally bought 53 watermelons or something on that order. And it doesn't make sense because what one person would ever buy 53 watermelons? But if you get real math problems, actually seeing it and saying, oh, wow, that really makes sense. That does it make sense that the water quality would need to be that way? Does it make sense that when you're making a chair, the same ones that they're sitting on in their classrooms, that these answers would make sense for that chair? So it really gets them more involved in the process and less about just, a calculation.
Middle school math teacher Marie Visti helps show her students that math is all around us, especially on the job. Are you a teacher? How do you bring to life concepts in textbooks? What was it like to teach math in the pandemic? How do you get students excited about learning? And how serious is the learning loss situation? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're discussing math skills and making middle school math concepts applicable to things we'd actually encounter in the real world. Are you a fan of real world math? Do you have strategies to make math concepts more relevant? How are you catching up students to grade level in these times? Join in on teaching, 800-642-1234. We have middle school math teacher in Green Bay, Marie Visti, stays with us. Marie, let's talk about girls in math. Barriers to girls in STEM has been this vexing issue for a long time, and things have come a long way. I look at my daughter, who really enjoys doing math for hours at night. How do you chip away at these long-held stereotypes that still persist that girls and math don't mix?
I think a big part of it is really talking about the roles that women have played in mathematics, you know, really bringing that to the forefront. It's more than just women. When we talk about our communities of color, various heritages, you know, there's a lot of underrepresented people in mathematics that we want to encourage to bring forward. When I think of these things, I think it's so much about bringing those names and voices forward and making sure that they're aware that they've been there, that they're part of the conversation and how critical those perspectives are. I think another part is encouraging discourse and communication in mathematics. We want to make sure that everybody's part of the conversation, that everyone's part of the sense making. So not allowing one dominant personality, not allowing for just one person to take things over, but really encouraging all voices within discussion to be heard and all viewpoints to be valued. I think that's something that's really critical in all areas of STEM.
There's also a fear of math or feeling afraid of doing math, or that hesitation of, it's math. How do you get students over those types of emotions?
We have conversations about growth mindset and the idea of that it's not where you are right now, it's where you're heading, that we're all an accumulation of our experiences and all the things that really came before us, and that there's so much potential for growth is a big conversation that we have. Math anxiety is a very real thing. I think part of it also is how we assign labels to people who are good at math, saying that someone is so smart because they can do math, because then what happens when we say that someone is, when we see struggling, is that perception kind of comes from within, and we think, oh my gosh, I'm struggling in math. I must be the opposite of smart. I tell my kids, they're all smart. It's all about potential and where they're going. I'm not concerned about who's going to know it first. I'm concerned about who's eventually going to know it. I tell them that when it comes down to a lesson or an idea, that they're really like a bag of popcorn. And when I put a bag of popcorn in the microwave, I really don't care which kernel popped first or second or last. Ultimately, I want to open that bag of popcorn and I'm going to enjoy it all. It's really about the end result. It's not about who gets there fastest.
What about learning loss? We've found that students have really fallen behind in these really core subject areas in the pandemic. What are you encountering with learning loss?
The last year and a half was a very real challenge for all of us, for teachers, for students, for families. And we can't forget that in any way, shape, or form. I think it's, for me, been really important to constantly be assessing and pre-assessing. What are the kids learning? What do I need to connect to? What do I need to bring forward? Because I need to honor that. I can't expect them to be in a spot because that's where I need them to be. I need to make sure that I'm connecting to those understandings and bringing them forward. Sometimes that means we need to go slow to go fast in a classroom, and that we need to make sure that we're having those deeper conversations, that we can't assume that certain things are already known. Some kids have managed to have the resources at hand and have the advantages to be very engaged. Some kids have struggled more than others based on any number of things. So it's really been about connecting and differentiating to make sure that all students are still part of the conversation, that they all know how welcome they are to be back, and that we're able to, that we honor where they are, not what they've lost.
We're with Marie Visti, who is a middle school teacher in the Green Bay Public School District, been in education for 19 years, and we're looking at teaching math, and just insights from a teacher. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Marie, what did all that time virtually and teaching in a virtual format, what did you learn in that environment?
I learned how much I loved my students. I always knew I loved my students, but I learned how much I wanted to connect with them and how much I valued that time with them, because, you know, it's one of those cases of you don't know what you've got until it's gone. There's a lot I learned about how to connect with students using technology that I really wasn't implementing before. It wasn't all about loss. There was a lot of learning that happened for us professionally, a lot of awareness that really got in our face pretty quickly. And so I'm not the same teacher that I was before I headed into it. I think it's changed all of us as educators as well. We have an awareness that I think we had to become hyper aware. And so we have that always with us. And the idea of differentiating using technology, various ways that we could connect with students that maybe we weren't thinking of before.
You know, parents saw the inner workings of schools. So many parents who were seeing their child at home, learning from home and juggling that in the background. And hearing those classroom interactions, I know it was so fascinating to me to have that inside look at how teachers teach. How have interactions been with parents in these times? And were you aware of that too, that you were in your students' homes?
At times it became quite aware based on how kids' microphones were on and who was talking around. So, you know, there's interesting insights that we got into some of that. I'm also a mom. I have a son who is a freshman in high school this year. So I had that opportunity to see that kind of on the parent end as well. Parents were some of my greatest advocates, and being able to communicate with them, they were really eyes and ears that I had that were very direct into kind of that classroom. And so communicating with parents became really critical. I think parents wanted to be there for their kids. They wanted to do everything they could. And for parents, whether the parents were also working from home, the parents were not able to work, but they were at home. For parents who weren't able to work at home, that they were in some of those jobs where they had to be away and they had to trust that their teenagers were doing what they needed to do during the day, really created a lot of different situations. But the one thing that became so important was communication. And that's one of the things that I learned coming out of it, was how important it is to communicate and emphasize that we're all part of this team that has this goal for their children to be successful adults moving forward.
We only have a few seconds left, but I'm wondering, what is keeping you up at night about education? What do you think about?
I think about how education has become political in a lot of ways. And so many of the conversations that we have are charged. I think there's this idea of what we want for our kids and what we want and why we get into education. And just really keeping that for myself at the forefront, because there's a lot of news out there. There's a lot of conversations about what's going on in classrooms, what teachers are doing, what teachers should be doing. And just kind of always having to remind myself that the goal is to take care of kids. The goal is to bring them forward into a just and equitable society that meets their needs and helps them to meet the needs of others.
Marie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. This has been a pleasure.
Marie Visti, middle school teacher in the Green Bay Area Public School District, been a teacher educator nearly two decades. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.